Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Well, I've been traveling the last few days, and I found myself in Spokane, Washington. This is where in the area where I used to live in northern Idaho, and I've been spending the day having a great time connecting to my old community up here and visiting old friends and acquaintances. One of the people that I have met over the years, and mostly it's because I've attended Sufi dance camps, is a lovely woman here in Spokane. Her name is Kuan Yin. Of course, she has another name, but I only know her as Kuan Yin, and she is Kuan Yin for me. and one of the things that I really appreciate about Kuan Yin is her sense of community, and I've watched her in the local Sufi community, and maybe we'll find out in a wider Sufi community, and how she is a connector for all these people who are in community and flow in and out, because as we all know, community is also a flow through as well as something that's stable. So I really want to appreciate Kuan Yin for her time and her space to do this interview. So welcome and thank you very much, Kuan Yin.
Thank you. It's a delight to have you in my home.
Wonderful to be here, now that I found it.
That's right.
Okay. So Kuan Yin, can you just tell us a little bit about your connection with Reiki, how you met Reiki, and maybe a story or two about your Reiki life?
Sure. I met Reiki through Nurunisa Joan Smith, who is a Reiki master who was living at that time up just over the border in Canada on the way to Nelson.
Right.
And so I had the blessing of being able to take trainings with her. And the miracle for me was having Reiki available to me. I'm a physician, and many times as a physician, one is called on in an emergency. So
right.
Once on the airplane, once by the, I was next on site for a terrible head-on collision, and I felt very blessed to have Reiki available to me in those situations, because there was nothing from a strictly medical perspective that I could do. I'm a psychiatrist, first of all. And very few people are having psychiatric needs. They're scared, but they... And the person, for instance, who was on the airplane was a woman who couldn't catch her breath and was frightened.
Oh, wow.
And so what I did was help her settle. And then I talked about the elbow phenomenon. The next person at my elbow, I looked over and there was this very nice man watching me. And I said, "What's your specialty?" And he said, "Cardiology." And I said, "Fabulous." And so she took over, and the woman did fine. She settled down. And then when I came across this car accident where I was next on site, the woman was trapped in her car. She was terrified for her children who were in the back. One of the children was injured. Helicopters were coming. People were going here and there. And I found that the most helpful thing I could do is help her not be frightened.
Mm-hmm.
So those were, and again, at my elbow, a person appeared, and he looked very familiar. And I thought I remembered him from a time my son had cut open his chin. And I looked at him, and I said, "Who are you?" And he was an emergency room doctor. And so I thought, how perfect. But the settling down, and then once we had a very interesting experience at a Sufi gathering in San Francisco. A man was walking ahead of, I was with Nurunisa and with another man who actually also is involved with Reiki. And this other man, this fourth person, was ahead of us, and he had tripped and fallen and very evidently had broken the bones in his lower leg.
Oh.
And we saw him down, and we hastened to him, and the people across the street had already called an ambulance. And this man was afraid. So again, it seems that fear is one of the most useful things here. We couldn't set his leg, but we could calm him. We could make him not go into shock. What was interesting about this story is then another group of people came along, and they started interfering, and they got involved, and they pushed past us, and they wanted to do things, and they wouldn't listen to what the fact that the ambulance was on its way, and what he needed was an ambulance and either surgery or a cast. There was nothing we could do except not make him worse.
Right.
And so they pushed past him, and they started jiggling his leg, and he started getting shocky. And we said, it was at that point we didn't want to get into a fight, but we said, keep him calm, the ambulance is on its way. And again, we delivered a person who was not afraid and not in shock to the person at the elbow. And it also reminded me that you have to always ask the question, is this mine? And when you come across a car accident, or you're the next person on site,
right,
when a person has fallen, or if you're on the airplane and they say, is there someone who can help? It's very nice to stand up and be willing to do, because all the tools in the world sometimes can't help nearly as much as getting a person's breath back in their body and get their fear diminished.
Mm-hmm.
So those are my most wonderful Reiki stories. I've loved receiving Reiki. I loved giving Reiki, having that mutual transmission. Mm-hmm. I feel very blessed to have it in my life and find it as really a remarkably useful tool in a variety of situations,
especially
calming people who are frightened, including myself.
Right. The last is very important.
Very important.
Yes. Great. Well, you know, I met you at a Sufi camp. I think that's where our connection has been. And one of the things that I, as you know, perhaps, is that when Noor Nisa began to really go deeply into her Sufi path, I was very intrigued because at that point, I was very young in Reiki, and I was looking for a spiritual path myself. And I had met a lot of people who were devotees of Bhagwan Rajneesh, and they had quite a community. And then I had another whole group of people who were devotees, or I don't know if devotees is quite the right word, but they went to the Siddha Yoga Ashram.
Yes.
And were involved with either Muknadanda or Guru Mai as gurus. And I felt very drawn to both of them. Rajneesh, because it seemed like he was really quite out there and kind of on the edge. And I liked that because I didn't want to be stuffed in a box. And I felt like he really opened the box. And I was very taken with the dignity and the serenity of Muktananda and Guru Mai, and also their brain. Like, I just got how brilliant both of these people have been or are. So that intrigued me. But when I began to look around myself, I also met, at that time her name was Waduda, and we did a lot of work together, and, you know, I just was taken by the dances because they represented to me a way of how I expressed my own spirituality, which was singing, music, dance, and circles.
And joy, yes.
Lots of joy. And also another feeling of kind of being on the edge. Like I tell some of my friends that I really, in my next life, if I'm going to have a spiritual path, I think it's going to be as a Sufi, because I love the celebration of what other people might call not insanity, but craziness, like just out there on the edge, mind creativity, which I really love, because I feel like I'm one of those people. Yes. So
I think so too.
Yeah, great. So I've been very blessed to be welcomed in the Sufi community and to be able to go to dance camp and to experience the ecstasy of the dance camp and the community there. And it's always intrigued me how tight, and I don't mean this in a way of constricted, but I do mean in the way of deeply connected, the people in the Sufi community are. So I'm really interested to find out about the very basic structure of the Sufi community. Obviously, they are held together by a common practice and a common spiritual belief system. But is there more?
Well, there's always more.
Yeah.
We could say that about anything. There's always more. Well, interestingly, my pursuit all my life has been to feel that joy, that connection, that ecstasy. And I had made a number of forays into my Christian journey.
Right.
And had a great attunement to Jesus, but kept trying through various churches to find that connection, that joy, that sense of being at the edge and
right.
and being having freedom, spiritual
right.
freedom, at the same time having the joy of that attunement to someone. And I got very involved with Muktananda when we
oh,
lived
wow.
in the mountains of North Carolina. And it was in the midst of all of that we went and encountered the dances of universal peace, or Sufi dancing, at a workshop in the Bahamas. And came back from that and told our friends, who were also involved with Swami Muktananda, we said, oh, we went Sufi dancing. It was so wonderful. They said, isn't that interesting? There's Sufi dancing at the yoga temple in Coconut Grove tonight. So we all went, and that was that. Partly, I'm attracted to this particular path because it is not, it doesn't have a lot of beliefs involved in it. And in fact, one of the central tenets is to uproot the biases of belief and disbelief.
Mm-hmm.
Even though traditional Sufism in the Middle East is seen as a mystical aspect of Islam,
mm-hmm.
we are really an interfaith spiritual group. So many people, we have Catholic brothers, we have Catholic nuns, we have a rabbi, we have people whose faith tradition is Christian and Jewish, who are pursuing Buddhist meditation paths, and it includes all that would not exclude us. So all inclusive paths.
Mm-hmm.
It is, even though I say it's not an Islamic path, it does not exclude Islam.
Mm-hmm.
So people have come to Islam through this. Many people have returned to Christianity through the path of contacting Jesus that comes to them or is seen through this beautiful illumination through the Sufi path.
Right.
And so that is a great blessing. So it includes everything, excludes nothing, except those paths that would exclude us.
Mm-hmm.
The roots of it go very deep before monotheistic religions go back deep into the earth and back the taproot deep into the early Divine Mother traditions and the earth-based religions. So it includes those as well.
Mm-hmm.
The dances of universal peace came through a very wild being who had been on the edges of life to almost until the end of his life, and that was Murshid Sam, who lived in San Francisco and was accepted pretty much around the world as an inspired being, as a Sufi Murshid. He was accepted by Nyogen Senzaki as a Buddhist teacher. He helped found a Christian organization, the Sufi Order, the Holy Order of Mans, and he was born Jewish. So he sort of had this same smattering that seems like we all do. And he felt that the Sufi path had heart. So that's why when the time came for him, when students were appearing in the late 60s, he chose that path to be his primary path of transmission.
Mm.
And so he had met this teacher who had come to the West from India in the teens and 20s. And his attunement was to Anaya Khan. And he felt that he had the heart connection. And then the dances began to come to him. And these are dances he was taking a bunch of hippies, many of whom were sort of tripped out on this and that, and saying, you know what, you need to learn to move together in joy. Joy is not just a solitary event. You can have it in a group and all be moving in the same direction, chanting holy names, chanting sacred phrases from all the world's religions, native peoples, goddess, Buddhist, Zoroastrian, Sikh, Hindu, Muslim, Jewish, Christian, all those. And again, the path of joy. And thank goodness we also get to sing and dance.
That's beautiful. I really, there was a little piece that you said about that, you know, what, and because I was born in 1948, so in the 1960s, I was just getting out of high school and going into college, so this was kind of the baby boomer generation, and the love generation, so love-ins and all that kind of thing. And it was true that somehow I felt at that moment for myself that I was drawn to groups, whether they were rock and roll concerts or a huge group of people living in a house, or how many people can you get in a Volkswagen?
Right. Some of them clowns.
Yes. All these different groups. And wanting to somehow find, I think, the similarity of who we were as human beings. And I didn't really reach that until I found Reiki and started to practice Reiki, and it obviously became my spiritual practice. I found out that I already had one. I didn't know it. And it's really wonderful to hear the story of the Dances of Universal Peace and this wise being, Merchant Sam. And so how would you describe the community that you have here in the Northwest? You have different dance camps. They're pretty much set. People come. But it's more than that. It's more of an everyday kind of community.
Yes, and that's part of it. It's similar to Reiki in the sense that it's not a philosophy that is separate from life.
Uh-huh.
How can these practices, how can these breaths, a beautiful book has just been published called Physicians of the Heart. And it's how to use the sacred names, the holy names, the wazifa from the Islamic tradition, as specific prescriptions based on their vibratory pattern and their linguistic pattern to treat the ills of our time. Alienation, isolation,
mm-hmm.
Feeling overwhelmed, can't sleep, can't think straight, all the things that we see. So working with all of these things to connect. Connection is one aspect of community, but obviously it's like family life. You have to learn how to connect, but you also have to learn how to disengage. When is connecting just becoming part of a group and it doesn't represent you anymore? And so that essential quality of spiritual freedom, liberation, is a key here. So if a person in our Sufi group says, well, I'm going to go to a Buddhist retreat, we don't look at them and say, how can you leave us? We're going to miss you so terribly. We see that as enhancing the work that they do. We see that as growthful. This community that we have here, we meet with dances, like locally in Spokane.
Uh-huh.
We have dances, we have class, and in the class, the process is to either do some kind of practice or guided visualization, and then try and bring it in and fold it in gently and tenderly to what it is that you're working on, what grief, what sorrow, what obligation, what tension, what cutting edge, and how can this be used, and how can the group be a container? So that's one of the sacred responsibilities in community, is to be the container that allows us to dissolve or let go enough to hear ourselves talk, to hear ourselves saying what we're really deeply saying.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise we just jabber.
Mm-hmm.
And we jabber all the time. I jabber all the time. You may not jabber all the time, Phyllis, but you might also.
Oh, I get there occasionally.
So we want to really hear deeply what our next step is and creating that container. But the price of that container is, it is the same price that we have many times in our family, which is, I used to say as a therapist, I could open my practice just for a week after Christmas, and it could be filled with people who either went home and saw their family or had no family to go home to. So both the freedom on the one hand, individuation, being separate, being autonomous, that's mm-hmm. a very big appeal, but also having people that you have connections with, that you can tell your stories to, you have a receptive audience. A woman came to class several weeks ago, and she said, a group of us had retired to the dining room, and we were drinking water and tea and things, and she said, I have something I want to share with all of you. And, of course, the group just went on talking about this and that and this and that for another 10 or 15 minutes. And finally this woman said, what's a person got to do to make an announcement around here? She had to sort of fight her way to be heard. And we were very happy when we heard her announcement. She'd gotten to sort of a new stage in her life, and it was a developmental thing, and it was really quite wonderful. But, you know, sometimes we have to fight with the people that we're in community with. It's not all puppies and roses and... I doubt if it's all puppies and roses in the Reiki community either.
Definitely
that there are
not.
Struggles and developmental tasks mm-hmm. in our practice. Some people don't like certain practices. Then don't do it. But do something. That's where the Rumi poem said, don't worry about the form of your prayer. Don't worry if you're pronouncing it just exactly right. Because God accepts bad coin. Pray anyway. Bring your whole heart in. So we accept it. People forget things and don't know things, how to do them right. We are all stumbling. We are all stumbling toward some unattainable, ever mm-hmm. escaping horizon. I was just reminded of a story I wanted to mention. We had a couple from our community move to Los Angeles, and there's no community from our particular order down there. So they found one from a cousin community. They found a class. And these are very, very nice and sweet people down in Los mm-hmm. Angeles. And this couple's a little bit rowdy. So they showed up, and the next week they went to class, and the gate was locked. And they thought, well, we could either decide they don't want us there, or we could decide that they want to see if we really want to be there. So they hoisted each other over the fence and showed up, you know, all dusty and sort of beat up by this journey over the fence. And they were quite welcome. But some of it, you sort of have to fight your way, just like that game, Red Rover.
Yeah.
You know, you have to sort of say, yeah, I really want to be there. I really want to be a part. Because we sometimes interrupt people, we sometimes are rough with each other, we sometimes don't get what the other person is saying, we are sometimes incomplete. And I actually brought something I wanted to quote. Is it okay if I quote
sure.
something? There's the wonderful poet David White from Whidbey Island, and he wrote about 10 questions that have no right to go away. Which it's like, what?
What?
10 questions that have no right to go away. But one of the comments he makes, he says, all intimate relationships, close friendships, and good marriages are based on continued and mutual forgiveness. You will always trespass upon your friend's sensibilities at one time or another, or your spouse's. The only question is, will you forgive the other person? And more importantly, will you forgive yourself? We have to deepen our understanding, make ourselves more equal to circumstances, more easy with what we've been given or not given. We must drink from the deep well of things as they are.
Mm.
So that to me is both the gift and curse of community. It's not about doing spiritual practice in particular, although spiritual practice opens the doorway to forgiveness. Forgiveness of myself, and it dissolves. It's a great lysing of irritations, angers, resentments, all those ways we bump into each other. Like I said, the woman who said, what's a person got to do around here to make an announcement? She fought her way through. She could have left and felt hurt. She could have felt unheard and hurt.
Right.
But instead, she made a decision to sort of play Red Rover and say, hey, I got something to say, and you guys weren't paying. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were just horsing around. We weren't paying very good attention. But she chose to come back and fight her way back.
Great. Wonderful. One of the things that I find maybe it's paradoxical. I don't know if this is the right word, paradoxical, but it's this place where it seems like to have good community, you have to have, as you said, strong people who are willing to stand up for themselves and not slink away in blame and sort of shame. And I feel like this is a great example, an everyday example of what we all have to do in order to make ourselves heard in our family or our spiritual community or whatever. And one of the things that I am so taken by is that as Americans, we have this great value on independence. But again, there is this place where can we really be so independent that we lose the need for community? And I think that actually in the real life of a human being, that's not possible, but we think it's possible. And I'm wondering how you feel about that.
Well, I think we certainly put a premium on individuation. And
uh-huh.
There are many places in the world that would not understand the concept of a person separate from community.
Mm-hmm.
And Reb Zalman Schachter Shalomi is often quoted as saying, there is no Judaism separate from community. You don't go into a closet and practice Judaism.
Mm-hmm.
You become a member. You become a part of a community, and you work together, and you work together, and you work together. You may pray together, and you may bake together, but you are together, and that's
right.
Where the work comes. And that's where, in essence, like in our, I was describing in our community, we do practices. We have a visualization. The things that help us dissolve those things that keep us separate.
Mm-hmm.
So by the end of class, we are reminded that this is my problem-solving basket of beings that allow me to speak so that I can hear myself more deeply,
mm-hmm.
so that I can ask one of the 10 questions that have no right to go away, as mm-hmm. David White would say. It can be rough, and some of it, the roughest part, is the part where we all have expectations of what other people will do.
Right.
And we certainly have learned enough by all of our journeys through personality assessments and typologies from the astrological to the Enneagram to all kinds of things, we've learned enough to know that people are different and they have different approaches. The one thing I love about this path, and I also experienced it when I trained in the Eureka School, which is, in a sense, another variant of a Sufi school, but we always love to see new people. When I was involved with Muktananda, there was sort of a hierarchy and a gradation there, and there was the in-group and the out-group, and everybody sought proximity to the guru.
Right.
But to some extent, what we have with this is a thrill that somebody new has come, and we get to have beginner's mind again.
Mm-hmm.
We get to hear it from the basics. I mean, certainly that's built into the Reiki work.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we have a hierarchy as Sufis. We have people who are moving in different directions and have been on the path longer or have a certain mastery of a particular area, and they have some recognition or they hold a post as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say, and certainly this is something Khadija shared, is the dynamic you get when you have the circle with a hierarchy is you get the energy of the spiral, which is different than absolute hierarchy or absolute circle. Circles don't get anything done. They get hung up on the virtues of potato salad versus coleslaw. Right?
Yes.
We've all been through that, haven't
we? We've all been through that.
Yes, I like them both. But nonetheless, decision-making, or what kind of soap should we use? And the hierarchy is one where people seem to love the hierarchy when they're on top, or if they're not on top, where they don't have to do any work. But neither of those really, as a standalone, the circle alone or the up and down alone, work very well. And so somehow or other, mixing it up a little bit and putting a little energy in there, it stirs things up. And when, of course, when we stir things up, we also, that's when we get aggravated. And when we get aggravated is when we start to learn things about ourselves. Most of us would rather not be aggravated and not learn anything, but that's not engaging fully with
mm-hmm.
life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. Well, I was just thinking that probably the people in the Sufi community don't have an idea of going off on their own, because how could you dance in a circle by yourself? I mean, it's a kind of oxymoron. So I'm just trying to figure out, is there a value that's understood about community in this practice?
I would say, too, that we do have our own individual practices that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And those practices involve typically concentrations and learning certain prayers and linking ourselves with those who've gone before us, mm-hmm. or ahead of us on the caravan, and those who are to come next. So that would
right.
be my children and grandchildren and their friends and those. Mm-hmm. So we're all on this journey together. So we do practices solo. And then we come for the party, which is the dances and the zikr, which is a ceremony of remembrance, where it's sung and danced in a way that evokes the beauty of that yearning, nostalgic longing for the divine, longing for something greater, longing for awe, that's a huge motivator for people to get together. It's like the beauty of four-part harmony.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw this recent wonderful TED Talk where they had a 2,000-person virtual choir from all over the world where people sent in clips of themselves following the direction of this choral director singing a piece he had written, and then they cut and pasted all of these, and they had people from Iceland and Russia and China and South America and the United States, all over the world. I just got goosebumps talking about it. In this 2,000-person virtual choir. Now, they knew they were joining something bigger than them, but, you know, they couldn't have had the payoff until they heard all 2,000 people singing.
Uh-huh.
Because there's something that happens that, you know, you just can't do yourself. I could, with sophisticated technology, sing all four or all eight voices.
Right.
In a choral piece. But I, oh, the joy of having three others or seven others to hear what is beautifully woven in the magic that occurs with that is the stuff of goosebumps.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, the 2,000-person virtual choir definitely had those goosebumps.
Wow. I'd love for you to send me the link on that
one. I will.
That's great.
Yeah.
So one of the things that occurred to me is that we're in Reiki, in our community, we are just starting to discover the joy and also experience, I would say, the opening that happens when we practice Reiki together. And there is this very interesting dance between this wanting to be independent and not wanting to follow rules. And at the same time, when we get together, if we all do the same hand positions at this and change at the same time and listen to the same silence or listen to the same music or whatever, there is a very special quality that happens.
Absolutely.
And it awakens something, but because we're not used to having that be formalized, like in a dance, it's just very interesting to watch this piece emerge out of our community.
And that's that dance between conformity, nonconformity, fitting in, not fitting in. And you even mentioned the word rules, and most people shudder.
Definitely.
Who grew up during this time. But there's something quite beautiful. I'm watching my grandchildren learn about the rules. And life's easier because rules are just agreements that we have with each other. More importantly, when we move together, just like it was so beautiful, you're describing the hand positions and doing those all together, we create an energetic field that, again, is better than, bigger than, and different from anything I can do by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what Murshid Sam wanted. He said, the armies of the world have known this. Get people marching, and they become a part of something greater. But let's do it for peace. Let's do moving together for peace, not to be an army, not to do this to crush an opposition or something
mm-hmm.
like that. But learn, and we can feel it. It's palpable when we do our healing service. You can feel this energetic field,
mm-hmm.
you know, this our individual energetic field is like a torus or donut that goes out from our heart,
mm-hmm.
around, back.
Mm-hmm.
But when we link up with a group of people and mm-hmm. we're within several feet of each other, that force field, it's like it becomes a giant capacitor.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do that by myself. I can be amazing by myself. But I can be really amazing in a group. And that's the power of prayers that are said in public settings.
Mm-hmm.
That's the power of songs that are sung together when the breath is entrained in a community of people. And there's this real joining of the heart. Something begins to happen
mm-hmm.
and to move and to melt.
Mm-hmm.
And to move towards the qualities that we want, which is more of compassion, more heartfelt, more joy, more caring, more awareness of one another.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot of celebration of our individual stories. That's what psychotherapy is. Come into individual session and let's talk about who you are and help you become all that you can be.
Mm-hmm.
But how much we miss the fact that nobody can do that by themselves. They can't really become themselves independent of community, which is the paradox you were speaking of.
Mm-hmm.
You could be a loner, but you're not going to be a fully individuated human being. because that needs to be done in the context of others.
I watched this movie called The Great Silence. I don't know if you know about this movie. It was on TV, and a dear friend of mine who lives here in Spokane saw it, and she was so taken by this that she bought it for me for my birthday a couple of years ago as a DVD. It's called The Great Silence, and it's quote, a day in the life of a group of monks who are in France, in the mountains, and they're Carpathians, I think. They're a silent order of Catholic monks. And this man was very taken by their practice and somehow got permission to stay with them for a few weeks. And he did all this filming, and then he cut and pasted it together. One of the things that was interesting for me is that they were solitary in community. I found that to be so fascinating. And they still had some monks who were the connectors, like the people who delivered the food to each of the individual rooms, you know, like doing this connecting, like blood flowing through the veins of the monastery, or the people who brought the sacrament to each of them, and then they would do this whole thing. And then every so often, I think once a month or some amount of time, they all get together for a Sunday, and then they can speak. But when they go out walking, they often are in silence, but together. So I found this, and the interesting thing is that, of course, there's not much sound in this movie. So I could play it for a group of people who were of all different languages. And it made sense. Because it was not boring. What happened is it drew you into the silence. Now, isn't that fascinating? Mm-hmm. So you became part of their silence on film. And I felt like this was a true experience of oral tradition. Now, the funny thing is, there are no words to hear, really. There's just sound, or the absence of sound. But this oral tradition piece, you were talking about this joining of voices, or the joining of dancing, or the joining of laughing, or stories, or so on. I just had this flash that what happens in community is the, oh dear, I've forgotten the word, is the amplification of oral tradition. And that is very important for human beings.
That's that part about, I can sit and pray, but if I am praying with others, I am this amp, it is not I that is amplified, it is the group that is amplified. Which permits me also to, I don't have to work so hard, or I can even work harder. You know, we can have all of this calling forth. Rumi, the poet, and Meister Eckhart, who were within a certain time zone of each other,
right.
Both said, if you want to find God, two good places to look. We're in the dance and in silence.
Mm.
So we've talked about both today. We talked about this great silence, and we've talked about dancing. When people do contemplative prayer, or when they do silent walking meditation. But a lot of it is to get ourselves out of our heads, into our bodies, into our hearts, into our viscera, basically, to have to be real and alive, not just a head cut off. Years ago, when I was in medical school, a man came and was a surgeon, and he talked about a patient of his, and he started off and he said, the patient I'm going to tell you about was a Presbyterian, And everything that happened came from that fact. I'm like, what? Because I was a Presbyterian. He had done the first, what was called a hemicorporectomy, where he cut this man's body in half, north-south, not east-west, because the man had a terrible tumor affecting the lower half of his body that was not metastatic, but was locally invasive, causing terrible problems. And he could have lived with just the upper half of his body. And he said, in essence, because he was Presbyterian and lived in his mind, he could have survived this. And I thought, that's a very odd explanation of what it means to be a Presbyterian. But I thought, okay. Now, there you have it. Do we want to be only Presbyterians? There's nothing wrong. I was raised a Presbyterian. But do we want to be where we have our spirituality embodied? I mean, certainly Reiki is an embodied spiritual practice.
Yes.
Where there's energy flowing through, and it's not just flowing through our mind or our heart or our viscera or our hands or our feet, but all of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess we have a little moment of our great silence.
Our great silence.
Yes. I was thinking that the first time that I ever danced the zikr was in Boise, Idaho. Well, not in Boise, but up in the mountains at the ski area. And Waduda at the time, she asked me, she said, well, what is it that you really want out of me this time? And I said, I'd like to dance. I'd like to whirl. She said, okay. So it was this perfect timing of full moon, beautiful night, summer night. We're up on the tennis courts with all the nets taken down. And we started being in circle. And, of course, we don't know what we're singing because it's mostly in
Arabic,
and there's no explanation, which feels very much like my grandmother's kind of teaching, do this, do that, but don't know why. And I just thought, after a while, I thought, you know what, I just can't chant one more thing. And all of a sudden, it just got totally quiet, silent. And then she said, whirl. And we just started doing, I mean, it was the most magic piece. And what was so amazing about my experience is that I was still and everything else was moving.
Ah, yes. And the whole world is...
Yeah,
is swirling.
Yeah, it was just this amazing experience. And I can, and in that moment, even though there was lots of chanting and the noise of people's feet and so on, it was so silent in that place, like this deep, deep silence. And I just remembered that when we were talking about silence.
So you were explaining to me about all the different kinds of zikrs, which I didn't know happened, and that's really beautiful. And I feel that what I sense from myself in my practice of Reiki, but also in participating in the dances on occasion, is that it brings me to a place of letting go of my, what keeps me from feeling the ecstasy of life.
Yes.
And also, it allows me to understand that it also allows me to see or feel or touch the vastness of what I don't know, the mystery. And it allows, then that allows me to be who I am. It's like, that's my context. I have every day this context that I know everything and I'm in control of everything, But really, to be put in this place where someone might say, oh, that really makes me small, it really makes me a part of. And I find that to be just this, such a profound experience for people to have together.
Yes.
And to experience that in the same circle, or be able to, you know, have had Reiki, and somebody meets up with some Reiki person in Germany and they say, oh, you know, have you ever had this experience? Oh, yes.
Those are those connection points, because probably even though we love to be individuals, we love and we sort of worship at the throne of individuality, probably the thing that is the most painful feeling that people describe is alienation. And that feeling of being not welcome in a given community, mm-hmm. or a given place, or to think and feel so differently. People will describe the agony of their emergence as an artist, for instance, that they had so little in common with other people, mm-hmm. until they found this new community of artists, or it could be Reiki, mm-hmm. people, it could be musicians, it could be Sufi people, mm-hmm. it could be psychotherapists, that they found a venue for this enormous creativity. And then you're describing that sense of awe that comes,
mm-hmm.
that attunement to the vastness of a world that I am only at this moment glimpsing a little of.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that helps me connect with that, I'm going to appreciate. Maybe not so much when I'm driving my car down the street. I don't want to necessarily be in the, you know,
right,
in the rapture, but I want to be able, when I've stopped my car, to not have to take hours or a day or a week, to be able to look up to the sky and see, I don't know if you saw last night's beautiful 7/8 moon.
Mm-mm.
It just was so large, and I was just up at Priest
Lake. Oh,
wow.
And
it was so gorgeous up there, the moon shining on the lake and the trees bending and playing. So I want to be able to do that, and I want to be able to have both the capacity of presence, which, again, comes on the Sufi path, on a lot of healing paths, certainly in Reiki, and also inquiry. That's the part of, what is the deeper question that's pushing me?
Mm-hmm.
What is the deeper question at the bottom of the well that's calling to me, so that I can listen more to the words I'm saying and I can hear? The beautiful use of tarot cards or any kind of system of revealing to ourselves in this conversation, going back and forth, where we really are eliciting our self beyond,
mm-hmm.
the limitations. I was just reading an absolutely fabulous book about dance, about Jacques d'Amboise, the famous dancer with the New York City Ballet, and it's an interesting book. But at the very end, he talked about the work with the young kids and putting on performances,
mm-hmm.
with maybe 2,000 children in it. And they decided to, instead of doing it geographically, like going to China or Russia, what they would do is they bring together geographical places. And so they had the kids come together, and they brought them in from the highest and the lowest points in the world, from the wettest and the driest.
Oh, wow.
From the hottest and the coldest. So these kids from Siberia and this afar nomadic tribe in Ethiopia came and worked together. And everyone who participated in this, they were falling all over themselves to underwrite, to paint scenery, to house people. It was just brought forth, this artistic thing brought out the best in people. And there were literally thousands of kids dancing together.
Isn't that fabulous?
That's fabulous.
I have this vision about the Reiki community also, and about all community. So I think at this time when a lot of our structures seem to be crumbling, and fear seems to be taking on a very a kind of a forefront role, that this place of Reiki or song or sitting in a circle or whatever we do to comfort ourselves, there also must be another a choice, and that is to choose to touch this profound ecstasy that we have also. The will, if we choose it, then we can create it in our reality.
That's beautiful. And I was thinking, if somebody had said to me, come to downtown and there are going to be 2,000 kids there, I would say, that's my worst nightmare.
Exactly.
But if you said to me, there are going to be 2,000 kids and something unbelievable is going to happen because they're all going to dance together.
Uh-huh.
And there's going to be an orchestra, and the music is written by Judy Collins, and there are stage sets by Alexander Calder, and so forth. I would say, put me in the front row.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Beautiful. Thank you very much, Kuan Yin, for
you
your time
much,
and your sharing.
It's a blessing to see you again.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Blessing for me, too. And for all of you, very thought-provoking. And also provocative in the sense of seeing that what we have in our at our fingertips, literally, is the ability to choose peace or to choose miracle or to choose fear or to choose comfort or to choose isolation. You know, I always thought I had only two choices, right and wrong. Mm-hmm. Now I know that there is no right and wrong. And it what happens is it allows me this myriad of choice that allows me to be a human being. And that's just an amazing, amazing journey.
And that's one of the songs we sing. Choose life.
Ah.
Choose life. And it's from the Bible, but it's also on Martin Luther King Jr.'s memorial, which says, choose life so we might live. So choose life. Thank you.
Thank you. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.